Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
Rise and shine, football fans. Dig out that jersey soaked in tears because it's time for Mackey and Judd's Vikings Heartbreak Pecking Order.
Jerseys soaked in tears. Judd is still in Philadelphia. I beg of you, my sources are telling me you guys aren't kidding about going. I love me some Ruby Tuesdays, don't get me wrong, but
we're going there next.
You're in Philadelphia. Go find a local place. Go get a cheesesteak, something local for your last meal in Philadelphia.
If we were gonna
go to a chain.
If we were gonna do that, Phil, we would have gone yesterday. Now we did, as I've explained to you, go clothes shopping and pick up some toiletries.
Wow.
But we are not, with a 6 o'clock flight, we have to return the rental car. If there was ever hope of us going to a local establishment, it was Monday, and that did not happen.
What was dinner last night?
5 hours.
Four beers.
Dinner was four beers?
Four beers.
Were they local beers, or did you just go Mick Golden's?
Yingling.
Okay.
I went downstairs. I had four Yinglings for dinner while Collar worked upstairs. I went and got a bag of peanuts from the hotel cashier and potato chips.
You couldn't take an hour? You couldn't take an hour to go somewhere local, immerse yourselves?
I did. I went downstairs and drank the local beer. I did something incredibly local. I went down and had a beer that once I get home, I can't have.
All right. Fair enough.
So, yeah, four delicious Yinglings that were fan-flipping-tastic.
Beer, potato chips, and peanuts for dinner.
He is a cultural master.
And by the way,
How
I did
are
not,
you still alive?
I did not wear my shorts. I wore my jeans. I classed it up.
Classy. So, the obvious question after Sunday's loss, where does it rank? My hashtag was added to the list. So,
I saw that.
Let's reshuffle our lists. Where does it fall? Vikings heartbreaking losses. Where do you put it? You go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to. I've got a list of six here. Okay.
Okay.
So I will start at number six. Number six on my heartbreaking list: 2015 first round playoff loss to Seattle at TCF Bank Stadium. The Blair Walsh miss. Early round playoff game, so it's not like you saw the team actually making a run to the Super Bowl, but nonetheless, with the way that game ended, it was heartbreaking. Number five, and this is probably too low, but I don't recall it. I just know about it. 1975 divisional playoff loss on the Hail Mary pass. Dallas 17, Vikings 14. So if I had been around for that game and watched it, I'd put it higher, but I didn't. So that's number five on my list. Number four, the ball going off the hands of Darren Nelson in the end zone that would have tied the game at 17 near the end of the game. NFC title game 87 against the Redskins is number four. Number three on my list, and this is where I think the debate can begin, I am actually going to put 2009 NFC title game loss to the Saints 31-28. I put that three because that season was a lot of fun. Brett Favre stood to get you there. That team was 12-4 and really good, but I never sensed the exact magic around that team that I did the 2017 Vikings. I'm going to put that number two on my list. The loss on Sunday, not because it was a close game that broke your heart at the end, but because when you look at the opportunity that was presented to a team that we didn't expect, I mean, we expected, I think, that they might be good, but not 13-3 good. And then you look at all the things that went right, and defense players didn't get hurt, and the complete miracle 61-yard touchdown pass that beat the Saints. When you look at all of those things that are coming together and the Super Bowl is in your town and you're thinking, this might be destiny, and then you lose that game, that's number two. Hmm. And number one, I think this game will probably not move for the rest of my life, at least, in my opinion. 15-1, 98. You are through halftime against the Falcons up until the half of that game, at least. You look absolutely fantastic. That team was so offensively dominant, high-flying. Randy Moss, 98, remains the loss to the Falcons, number one on my list.
All right, so speed through those again. Those are your Vikings heartbreaking loss leaders there. You have six of them.
One, the 1998 title game loss to the Falcons. Two, the loss on Sunday. Three, the 2009 title game loss to the Saints. 4, the title game loss in 87 to the Redskins. 5, the 75 divisional playoff loss to Dallas at Metropolitan Stadium. And number 6, the Blair Walsh wide left kick against the Seahawks 2015 TCF Bank Stadium. Those are my 6.
So I actually have 10, and one of them has 2. I put 2 in one of them.
Wow. Okay.
So I did a full, I mean, honest, you could go 15 deep on this list. Vikings heartbreaking losses. 2 things. Number 1, before I get to my list, let it be known, for anyone who rips me as the young whippersnapper, not respecting heartbreak from the 70s, Judd just left off all 4 Super Bowl losses from his heartbreak list. So, and I'm not even like debating it. There's a lot of meat on the bone there that you put on your list.
Yeah.
But people always rip me like Royce.
Oh, you know why? You know why? Because I told you this all last week. If you're a Viking fan, getting to the Super Bowl was good enough for me.
Okay.
I wanted you. I basically took this list to mean you at least got to that game.
And I disagree, as you're going to see with my list.
Mm-hmm.
Honorable mention for me actually is the 1987 conference championship, the Darren Nelson play, and I put it outside the 10 for this reason. If you watch that play over and over, degree of difficulty was higher on that catch than people give it credit for.
Agreed.
And I'm not 100% sure it would have been a touchdown even if he catches it. And so, because he was right on the doorstep, he could have stumbled, and then they have to go into overtime still. So some factors make that 11 on my list.
Okay.
Number 10, 41 donut. Pleasant surprise to be playing in that game after the heartbreak from the previous 2 seasons. But you had a first-year starter in Dante Culpepper. It never fully felt like a championship team. They got smoked, so it's number 10 on my list. This is a sneaky one, number 9. The 1999 divisional round loss to the Rams, and I put it as a heartbreak because there was still some hope that those Vikings that just broke the single-season offensive scoring record the year before, that they would show the Rams who the best offense truly was. I mean, that's what it was billed as, right? Greatest show on turf against the Randy Moss Showtime offense, and Jeff George was the new quarterback.
High-flying Rams.
And you thought, for a while there, as a Vikings fan, you thought, you know what? This offense is going to show that offense who the boss is, and the Rams absolutely throttled you in the second half of that game.
Yeah.
Number 8, the Blair Walsh miss wide left from 27 yards. The Seahawks were an absolute force at that time in the NFL, and you had kind of arrived early as a franchise under Mike Zimmer, and you had them beat. It was the coldest, most memorable game, you know, in recent Vikings history in terms of weather.
Mm-hmm.
Number 7, the first Super Bowl loss against Kansas City. And it's not higher because it's only the second playoff appearance ever at that point in team history. It was a fresh, younger team, late 1960s. So it's number 7 on my list. Number 6, the 2nd and 3rd Super Bowls, I'm putting as a tie, a heartbreak tie. People kind of forget the opponents they lost to. Miami. Miami was like, if you include playoffs, over that 2-year stretch, back-to-back Super Bowl wins, they were like 30-2, including an undefeated season the year before.
Those were better teams than you, absolutely.
Yes, it was a Pittsburgh dynasty in the 3rd Super Bowl. So, yeah, like, you lost 4 Super Bowls, but you also, I mean, for God's sakes, you lost to an impossible-to-beat Miami team and a Pittsburgh dynasty. Mm-hmm. Number 5, we agree in the range here, the Pearson push-off game. Divisional round game, not a Super Bowl, not a conference championship, but some people argue, this is before I was born, but some people argue that might have been the best Vikings team ever to that point. 12-2, they outscored opponents by 200 points in the regular season.
Yep.
Number 4 on the heartbreak list, the Brett Favre interception game, the 2009 NFC Championship game.
Interesting, okay.
Number 3, and I didn't experience this one, but I'm putting it, I'll explain it. 1976, the last Super Bowl loss, so the 4th Super Bowl loss. Fran Tarkenton was 36 years old. You kind of knew it was coming to an end. It was the end of an era. So you go to the Super Bowl. It's your one last shot. You don't have to play the Dynasty Steelers. You're past the Dolphins at that point. You run into the sort of the upstart Raiders, and John Madden had yet to win a Super Bowl. And this was your last shot, really. I mean, I know they went back to the playoffs a few times, and Bud Grant was still the coach, but your quarterback was aging. So to know that that was the end of maybe a window or the end of an era for those fans, and I wasn't alive, but I'm putting it number 3 on the list. I'm going to tip my cap to a previous generation of Vikings heartbreak. And you and I agree, number two, the loss on Sunday, and number one is 1998. So 98, still the king of the hill with, you just didn't see it coming. I mean, it was a home game. You didn't respect the Falcons. Your high-powered, record-breaking offense, you didn't see it coming until the fourth quarter.
And for one half in that game, for the most part, you were really good.
Yes, yes.
The first half, you were really good.
So let's do this. Let's pause, because you and I are both making a pretty bold claim. With all of the Vikings' heartbreak in history, four Super Bowl losses, all the other games we have on this list, the Pearson push-off game, other modern Vikings losses, we're putting the Sunday loss number two on this list. Is it recency bias, or is it objectively top two heartache in Vikings history? Let's expand on that, and we can take phone calls. Are we way off base here? 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. You can tweet at us, at 1500ESPN Judd, at Phil Mackey. Judd still stuck in Philadelphia. Mackey and Judd.
The Mackey and Judd Show rolls on.
Yes, sir!
On 1500 ESPN.
All right, Judd is still in Philadelphia because travel and weather and all those kinds of things.
So closed runways.
Closed runways, everything. So you and I just ranked our Vikings heartache pecking order. And I drew my list out to like 11. You just went with the essential six pack, but we both agree.
Yes, I did.
Yes, we both agree 1998 is number one. And we both agree that the Sunday loss in Philadelphia is number two. So let's expand on that, because I think there's different generations of Vikings fans that would say, oh, come on, like four Super Bowl losses, those have to be above. Yep. I put the fourth Super Bowl loss number three. Yep. Above the Brett Favre interception. So why do you rank Sunday above all those other maybe old school losses?
Recency bias, Phil, is not it. In my opinion, it's perspective on this franchise. And it's perspective on sports. This season, everything went right for you. Your quarterback, your starting quarterback, came in after the first game and said, my knee is killing me, I can't play. And you turned and looked at a guy who you signed to a one-year contract, a career backup, and he stepped in and played really well for the most part, right? Dalvin Cook goes out in week four, and you're like, this could be a problem, and it's not. Your offensive line is rebuilt and plays great. Your defense, for the most part, has health throughout the entire year and is very, very good. The perspective that I have is these type of things don't happen on a yearly basis. Next year, guys are going to get hurt. Things could go wrong. Think about the amount of things until Sunday's loss that didn't go wrong ever, that didn't go wrong at all. So I look at 2009, and I look at this team, and I say, okay, Favre certainly had a great year. But if I look at those teams as a whole, the 2009 team I thought was very good and very nice. But as this 13-3 team developed and defensively at times was dominant, I said, if you put the 2017 team against the 2009 team, I believe that Zim's team wins that game. This was a window of opportunity, blessed with, for the most part, health and an incredible fortune with backups who played great. And I don't for one second expect that everything that went right for you in 17 will go right for you again in 18. So that's why I bumped a 2017 slightly above 09.
So I'm with you. There's a bunch of reasons for it. And number one has to do with the tension that builds up as a franchise continues year by year, decade by decade, through a drought or through, you know, in the Vikings case, it's not even a drought. It's just they haven't won their first championship yet, because their first NFL championship was early in the Super Bowl era. So we don't count it like we would count the Eagles NFL championship in 1960. But that was the league, right? I mean, they had the AFL in 1960, but the NFL was its own league. They didn't have there was no merger. There was no Super Bowl.
Yes. So
Eagles can still claim that 1960, or the Browns, for instance, in the Jim Brown era, they
that
can claim championships.
Game. Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. So it's a bit of semantics there, but I think as the tension builds up, there's a reason why the Red Sox lost, I believe, a World Series in seven games in the mid-40s, like 1946. And at that point, it had been decades since they won their last World Series. It had been like two decades. But as the decades pile on and the tension mounts among the fan base, among the media, among the players and the stakeholders, you know, in the organization, losses matter more. So it's not that people are going to say, wait a second, a Super Bowl loss is always going to be more devastating than a conference championship loss, period. But I disagree. If your franchise is still relatively new and it's 1973 or 1976, those are devastating losses, but you've only been in existence for like 17 years at that point. When the Vikings lost their first Super Bowl, it was their second ever playoff appearance. It was kind of like when the Carolina Panthers went to a Super Bowl in the early 2000s. Like, they hadn't been around that long. Yeah, does it suck to lose on a last-second field goal to the Patriots? Of course. But it's going to be more devastating if the Panthers still don't have a championship in, like, 50 years, and they bring the best defense in the NFL to an NFC championship game and get beat. I think history matters. The piling up of history and tension adds to it. And the fact that your calling card was the best defense in the NFL and you got absolutely run out of that stadium, 38 points by a backup quarterback in Nick Foles. Mm-hmm. So it all the ingredients, the blowout, you didn't expect that. You expected to win. It wasn't really house money. People say, well, Stephon Diggs, the miracle play, it's house money. It's the opposite. The pressure to build that play up into one of the great plays in NFL history by paying it off for a Super Bowl, Raise the stakes of that NFC Championship game, and you failed.
And unless you're the Patriots, you cannot count on success on a year-to-year basis, right? Look at the teams that made the playoffs in this conference last year, and if I'm not mistaken, the Falcons came back and that's it, correct? The Giants went from a playoff team to 3-13. Everything went wrong there.
Yeah.
So the point being is this is one league where it can fall apart as quickly as possible. I mean, go back to the top of the show, and you go back and look at the 2000 Vikings go to the conference title game. The 2001 Vikings come back and go 5-11. The 2010 team goes 6-10. The 2016 team starts with 5 wins and everything goes wrong. So there cannot be a presumption that success, unless you're the Patriots, there can't be a presumption that success will simply be built upon. Everything went right for you, and you got to Sunday and got absolutely waxed.
People are strongly disagreeing with us on Twitter. 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. AT chimes in, says, recency bias is strong for Mackey and Judd today, saying that 2017 was a more heartbreaking loss than 09. That's craziness.
But here's why. If this list was just the games themselves, like just the games, then 09 takes the cake. I get that.
Agreed.
98-09. But AT, what we're trying to say here is opportunity. As a season went, opportunity. And you were coming off a game that you should have probably lost, and you won on a last-second play that made you say there might be something special here.
Yeah,
that's what bumps it above 09 to me.
These four boxes are checked, and they're very important. Home Super Bowl at stake. Actually, it's 5 boxes. Home Super Bowl at stake. Potential legendary play and moment that you can elevate to this completely new level, the Stephon Diggs miracle. It's still a great play, but it means less because they didn't pay it off. Best defense in the league going into the playoffs. Added years between 2009 and 2017. That's 8 extra years. That's like a fifth of the franchise's life. 8 mm-hmm. extra years of tension and misery. And you were facing a backup quarterback. In 2009, you were facing Drew Brees. And Drew Brees was an MVP caliber quarterback even in 2009. And he's gotten even better since then. So, like, we're kind of splitting hairs a little bit. If you want to put a lot of it's personal choice. If you want to put the 2009 game ahead of this, I'm not going to fight you to the death on it. But I think to say it's recency bias is wrong. You're not considering all the other factors. Let's take a call here, Judd, from Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
You guys aren't even close. I've been watching the Vikings since 1968, and in the panoply of all the different disappointments that they've given us, you have to put at least a couple of the Super Bowls in there.
Well, we did our rankings. You probably missed our first segment on this. I've got the fourth Super Bowl, number 3 all time, and the other mm-hmm. two, and the second and third ones are close behind it. So.
Well, right, but to me, probably the most disappointing loss in the playoffs for the Vikings was 1974 when they got robbed by the referee.
The Pearson push-off game?
Yeah, Drew Pearson pushed off. I mean, it's an obvious foul. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just that. It's that the 74 team was probably the best Vikings team of that era that they had. I mean, they were firing on all cylinders going into that game. And it wasn't just the push-off. There was other things that happened during that game that were questionable calls and questionable decisions. And as a Vikings fan, it was just it was devastating. Now, they did go on to go to another Super Bowl and lose, but they were not the better. They were not as good a team in 75 as they were in 74.
Yeah, and a lot of people say that the Pearson push-off season, like you just said, Mark, was maybe the best Vikings team to that point in its history.
Yes, I would. That's what I'm trying to say, is that they were probably better than they'd ever been, and I don't know if they've ever been that good as a team since. Now, this loss that we just experienced, it was tough, but I think you guys are and have a little bit of recency bias, because to be perfectly honest with you, I really went into that game expecting them to lose, even though I hoped they would win. But this has been the Vikings.
Yeah, it's until Mark, it's a great phone call, and until they rewrite their own story, Judd, this is it. But I think Mark almost in a roundabout way proved our point for us, in that Mark comes from the early, the 1960s and 70s generation of Vikings fans. But now you've got these other two generations from maybe the 90s and now the 2000s. This loss on Sunday weighs even more, because now it's multi-generational, the heartbreak, too. Like, you're adding layers of fans to the heartbreak. Like, you're picking them up as you go.
And Sunday's loss, too, is an interesting one, because it came after what was probably the most fortuitous lucky break in franchise history, right? Or one of them. I mean, when you throw up what amounts to a desperation pass with 10 seconds left, and that son of a buck is not only caught but taken in for a touchdown, like, that's when you start to think to yourself, wow, this is interesting. And I challenge you to give me a playoff play, and I don't think that you can, in Vikings history that is the same as that play.
You can't. So, I mean, there's nothing in NFL history.
So the point being is now we are used to heartbreak as far as Walsh misses, Anderson, same thing, right? Now we've got, oh my goodness, it happened for us, and now you're going to go play a team and you're favored in that game, and you're thinking to yourself, this might finally be the year, and you go there and you don't lose, you get destroyed. Yeah. So that's where this defeat on Sunday becomes its own entity to me, is it now goes in sort of a new pile, which is fortuitous game before it. You're thinking to yourself, this might be destined at least for them to play at home, and then they go and absolutely get, you know, blown off the field.
Yeah, if you want to make a point for the 1970s diehard Viking fan, yes, it was early in the franchise's history, and so you had a lot of time to, you know, to make up for it, and it hasn't happened yet. But imagine this 4-year stretch, and a lot of listeners didn't just imagine it; they lived through it. Super Bowl loss, Super Bowl loss, Drew Pearson push off, Super Bowl loss, four straight years, and then losing in the conference championship game in 1977. And then losing in the playoffs again in 78. And then it was a lot of like 7-9, 9-7 tapering off. And then the end of the Bud Grant era in the early 1980s. It was just kind of sometimes the era ends abruptly in Vikings history. The Bud Grant era just tapered off slowly for 5 years of like 9-7, 7-9 football into Les Steckel. And then
I was going to say, and then
rejuvenate it.
So then Bud stepped down, and you get Steckel, and you're thinking, oh, wow, I don't know how this is going to go. And you go, win 3 games.
Yeah.
And then Bud has to come back and save you again. So.
Yeah. All right, Dave, what kind of questions are you going to fire at us when we come back?
Most excellent questions, Phil. Most excellent ones. Vikings, maybe a little Wolves related as well.
All right, Judd's in Philadelphia still. Another couple segments here, Mackie and Judd.
Phil Mackie, Judd Zolgad.
This is like a marriage.
Mackie and Judd.
Might be boring, but it's stable.
On 1500 ESPN. Now on Mackie and John.
Do you believe in past lives? Did we ever really land on the moon?
Questions.
What are the 6 degrees that separate you and Kevin Bacon?
Of significant importance.
All right, Mackie and Judd. Judd's in Philadelphia still. You guys are making big lunch plans, a little salad bar at Ruby Tuesdays. Just a classic Philadelphia joint, that Ruby Tuesdays.
I went salad bar yesterday, so I'm thinking maybe burger today.
Oh, back-to-back days at Ruby Tuesdays. Big
back
time.
No. This will be back-to-back-to-back.
Wow, 3 straight days.
We went on Sunday before the game. Then we went for lunch after the show on Monday. This will be trip 3.
What is wrong with
it's
you guys?
It's the hat trick of Ruby Tuesday.
This is it. So I love when we go to Fort Myers and Judd and I get a week in the sun and baseball talk. But there's, like, when we go places where you and I differ the most, you pick one usually chain restaurant, Applebee's in Mankato, and that's where you're just going to go every meal, every day, same chain restaurant.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys want to explore the culture? Florida, Philadelphia, go immerse yourself in the city's culture. Seafood in Florida, whatever. Go get a cheesesteak somewhere.
I enjoy consistency.
There's a Ruby Tuesdays in Roseville. Like, you can go there
anytime
you want.
It's really good, too. I go there. It's really good. See, I knew it from going there to eat lunch with Dawn, and so I said to myself, Ruby Tuesdays, heck yeah. I like the salad bar. It's a really good salad bar, by the way.
What is wrong with you guys?
I'd be happy to do an endorsement for their salad bar, because I can tell you right now, it's an outstanding salad bar.
Oh. So many opportunities.
A wide variety, too, to choose
personal
from
shots there that I will avoid.
Ruby Tuesdays. A wide variety. Spice of life. David? David?
Dave just quit, actually.
I'm checking out. Yeah, I'm good for
the
day.
You've been checked out for 2 years now.
Oh!
No, I shouldn't have said that. Just Oh, he ripped me or before. No, it's fine.
The fact that you think it's only been two shows how much attention you've been paying. All right. You are Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman, all right? You're together in a room today, nice conference room. There's a big whiteboard on the wall, and you've got all the players on the roster written down, and you're going to put them in one column. You're going to move them to the definitely going to be here in 2018 column. Probably we think we'd like to have them here in 2018. Or there's no bleeping chance they're on the team in 2018, whether it's free agency, you're going to trade them, you're going to cut them, they want to leave, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Give me 3 names right now that are in that third column.
That you just don't want them back for sure?
That either you don't want them or you know they're not coming back.
Michael Floyd, I don't know, he didn't really do anything. He
did absolutely nothing. He's a very solid guy.
Yeah, kombucha.
There was, yeah.
Why did they go through so much with that if he was going to be such a non-factor? I would have just released him at the time and said, Mike, it didn't work out. Sorry.
It is weird. I would put, they give up an actual draft pick for Tremaine Brock, who just played special teams all year and wasn't even really a standout, was he? He was just on the team. So I would say those two guys are in that category. And then I think Joe Berger is going to stick to his word and retire. So I would say you're going to be looking for a new starting interior offensive lineman, though. So two of them, I think you just say goodbye to. One of them you'd like to have back, but he's going to retire.
I think your first two are very strong. Floyd, you went through a lot of work to get him, and he did nothing, so he's gone. Brock was a guy that you got for depth and didn't work out or played on special teams. My third one, though, I'm going to go with Sam Bradford. I don't trust it. Like, with Bradford, I'm convinced he's got a chronically bad knee that is never going to be the same. And so if I look at Teddy and I look at Case, I hope that Teddy is back. I look at Case as objectively as possible. But Bradford, I think if you sign him and you play him next year, you might get 4 games in, and guess what? That knee starts to give him problems. It starts to swell. So Bradford's my third, based on the fact that I think as far as reliability goes from him, it's basically gone. And if I can't trust him, I can't play him.
He's a temptress. He's the NFL temptress, though. You know he's had 18 surgeries on his knee. You know that he's mostly underachieved in his career to this point, and he's been in the league for closer to a decade than not. And yet he somehow still pops up and teams give him a shot every year.
Former number one pick, yes. But
so I'm not going to rule him out entirely, because they could bring him back on an incentive-laden deal and pair him and Teddy in training camp and say, all right, May the least damaged knee emerge.
Yeah, I just don't trust it. Not one bit.
Your Timberwolves, if the season ended today, would be the third seed in the Western Conference. They are a half game up now on the San Antonio Spurs, who are, you could say, reeling now with Kawhi Leonard being out again. Boys, if this keeps up, if the Wolves enter the Western Conference playoffs as the third seed, and let's say barring any injury, any major problems, you know, Butler and Crawford come back just fine and there's no other issues, is there any excuse to not make the second round and make one hell of a series out of it, with which would probably be the Rockets?
I would say no. I believe, you know, write that down, 2 weeks back, I picked them to play OKC in the first round and to beat them. I think if you are fully healthy with the style that your team prefers to play, which, of course, includes lots of defense, I would be disappointed if they didn't win, if they're the third seed, a first-round series. After that, it gets very tough. But I would be... The answer to your question, I would say that you should have every reason to be expected to win that first round series.
I'm going to two-part answer to that question. There's only two teams that they wouldn't beat in a first round series. They will, and that includes the Spurs if Kawhi Leonard's out. If Kawhi Leonard comes back and they get like a 4-5 matchup or something, or they have to face the Spurs at some, that would be difficult. But as of right now, as the NBA stands, they would beat every other team in the Western Conference, not named Golden State or Houston, in a 7-game series. Now, Oklahoma City, they might go 6 or 7 games with some of these options, like an OKC, New Orleans is kind of figuring it out. Boogie Cousins went for 45, 24, and 10 or something absurd last night.
Yeah, I saw
and a
that.
Bunch of blocks. I feel like he can do that whenever he wants, but only chooses to do it about 10 times a year. He's incredibly talented.
It's fleeting.
But the second part to Dave's question is, and make it a hell of a series in the second round, I think the Wolves, as currently constructed, would get beat in 5 games or swept by either Golden State or Houston. So I think they're going to win their first round matchup and then get run out of the arena 4 times by either Golden State or Houston. There's too much of a gap between the made 3-pointers between those two teams. And you think about how great you have to be if Golden State and or Houston is making like 10 or 12 or 15 more 3-pointers in a game than you. Are you going to be that much better in rebounding or you know, paint points? Like, you have to make up some other area in a big way to beat one of those teams, even in a game. Forget about beating them 4 times in 7 games. So, but that would still be a successful season if they could get the 3 seed and then beat New Orleans in 6 games in the first round, and then, you know, I don't know, get beat by the Rockets or whoever gets the let's say that'd be the number 2 seed that they would have to play if the standings held.
So basically, the Spurs are going to fall a little bit without Kawhi to the 6 seed. Wolves are going to keep the 3. Kawhi's going to come back right in time for the playoffs.
And
exactly.
Get bounced in 6.
That could very, very easily happen.
Final question. Judd, remind us all what you are wearing right now.
I am wearing my black mesh shorts and, more importantly, my 2017 NFC North, or I'm sorry, Conference Champion Eagles t-shirt.
And last night you went down to the lobby, was it? Or maybe it was earlier today with your mesh shorts and the tube socks that you pulled down to look classy?
That was yesterday, and that's absolutely correct, yes.
Wow.
You have characterized what I did yesterday correctly.
I'll add, since you're painting a visual of Judd Zulgad, the Judd that we know, his mailbox at work here has been jammed for, I believe, 3 years. If you walk by, everyone's got kind of a cleanly little mailbox, except for Kenny, who still has his Christmas cookies in there.
I have no food in mind. There's no food in mind.
You don't know that.
I don't know if you can be sure about that. I think last year's Christmas cookies are still in your mouth.
There might be a mouse in there. I don't know. Okay.
All right. Well, the question is, since Judd dresses embarrassingly once in a while, we all do. We're guys. Something you either are or should be embarrassed about still wearing, and or something that your significant other is embarrassed to see you still wearing.
Where does the list start for that one?
Yeah, the second one is an endless list. Like, pretty much everything could be construed as embarrassing.
You're really going to wear that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going to work? Yeah.
Yeah, that's all the time. Or aren't you going to iron that?
No, probably not.
No, I'm
It'll
not.
Work itself out, hon.
I'm walking out the door.
I still have in my repertoire, this is the oldest shirt I have that's still in play, from 1995.
Wow.
I have a shirt
that's
in play.
23 years.
So, and mind you, I wasn't a grown adult in 1995. I was 10. So I still have a shirt in my repertoire from when I was 10 years old. Yeah. Remember the Bud Light slogan, "I love you, man"?
Of course.
Yes.
It's a Bud Light shirt that says, at the time it was like, I think it's an XL that was way too big when I was 10 and now fits me great. It just has giant armpit holes and a couple holes around the back of the collar.
How black are the armpits?
They're not black. They're kind of yellowish, but they're cut out.
Oh.
They're naturally eroded. Yeah. And so it says, "I love you, man," on the front, and on the back it says, "But you're not getting my Bud Light."
How often do you wear that shirt?
Oh, now, I mean, it's so fragile now. I don't wear it very often.
And I love it.
And I can't bring myself to throw it away because it's my oldest shirt.
It's a geriatric shirt.
I do have a Bon Jovi shirt, one of those like baseball sort of three-quarter sleeve shirts that's definitely older. It's from a 1987 Slippery When Wet tour that I just bought on eBay at some point.
Yeah.
So that's the oldest shirt I have, but the oldest shirt that I've had in my possession the whole time is from 1995.
That's really impressive.
What about you?
So to answer the second part of your question, which for me is more fun, David, my problem is this. I can't tell what things match and what don't. I have no clue.
That's not that hard. Like,
so the wait. But the worst was one day I was going to wear, it was a summer day and we were going downtown, and I was going to wear my checkered shorts. And I thought to myself, well, this checkered shirt matches my checkered shorts perfectly, and I'll wear them together.
Yeah, if you want to look like Howard Cosell in the 60s.
Well, and Dawn tried to explain to me. Well, actually, at first she said, "You're not serious, are you?" And I said, "Yes, I'm very serious. I think that these two things match. They're checkered." And she said, "You do get that you look like a complete fool. And explain to me why you can't wear checkered shirts with checkered shorts." But to this day, I still struggle because I think to myself, well, this is green and that's green, so it's going to all match together.
Yeah,
and
you look like a Teletubby.
Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And so I think I've improved, but I'm not quite sure. That's the worst.
But like,
yes.
But how? Yes. Okay, just on your own without Dawn.
Yeah.
Can't you make the decision? I don't want to dress in full green from head to toe and think like
well,
that. I don't want to look like a stoplight.
I thought it all matched together. I thought green and green would be perfect because it all matched. I didn't understand that checkered on checkered does not have a good look. I would think if it fits together like a puzzle that it would be a good look.
Oh, my God.
I didn't understand it didn't. And the really unfortunate thing is this is probably 5 years back, so I was probably 43 at the time.
Remember all of this, listeners, when Judd is trying to deliver a serious
listen, when it comes to
sports,
when it comes to sports, I'm beyond reproach. When it comes to life, I struggle.
Oh, my God.
All I know is I went downstairs last night at this hotel, and I pumped my hard-earned cash into the economy by buying 4 Yingling beers, and I got laughed at for it. I mean, I was giving to Philadelphia last night after they took from us on Sunday.
You are special, with a capital S. We have one more segment to go. We're just going to let Judd talk about fashion to wrap things up from Philadelphia. Before we go anywhere else, if you would like to make between $30,000 and $60,000 more than you thought you were going to make on the sale of your home, listen up, because Chris Lindahl, which is the number one RE/MAX results team in the nation, is offering all of the tools you need to make a ton more money on your next home sale with the Seller Workshop taking place January 29th through the 31st. So it's happening next week. It's a 3-day workshop and seating is limited. They're going to sell out sometime this week, so make sure you visit sellerworkshop.com or call 763-401-SOLD. I have personal experience working with the Chris Lindahl team. It was about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, that my condo sold for a lot more money than I thought. I put the whole process in great hands with the Chris Lindahl team. You can do the same thing and even go a level up by taking part in this seller workshop. Again, January 29th through the 31st, sellerworkshop.com or 763-401-SOLD.
Mackie and Judd now continue on 1500 ESPN.
New today on digital from director George Clooney. Don't miss the darkly comedic thriller Suburbicon. Matt Damon, Julianne Moore, and Oscar Isaac star in the film. Critics are calling smart, funny, and entertaining, and full of twists and turns. Get Suburbicon on Fandango now, 2 weeks before Blu-ray. Rated R from Paramount Pictures, and enter to win a digital HD download right now on the 1500 ESPN stream player.
An incredible season for us as a family. It's been an incredible season for us as a team, the family team. And, you know, it's just can't say thank you enough.
That's Case Keenum. And talking about, he's a free agent. He's talking about the great season he had, obviously, in 2017. We ranked our Vikings heartbreaking losses in franchise history. And people disagreed. We both said the game on Sunday is number two behind 1998. And a lot of people are vouching for 2009 on our Twitter feeds here. This is from MN Sports. For me, the 09 season was the biggest heartbreak because I think we had the best chance to win the whole thing that year. Our defense was too hurt in 98, and this year we would have been playing the Patriots. Could have beat the Colts in 2009. It was
That's
a great
not a bad
chance.
Point.
It was a great chance.
Yep.
It was.
Yep.
We're splitting a lot of hairs with this heartbreak conversation.
Here's why you guys are right about Sunday being more heartbreaking. You went in with expectations that you were going to win. You went in with a great defense. You were going on the road as the favorite, as a, 3-point favorite, right?
Yeah,
against
correct.
The Eagles, against Nick Foles, who was supposedly crappy, and you got six different kinds of you-know-what kicked out of you.
Yes.
Now, here's why you're wrong.
Okay.
Because 2009, you went in with no expectations, knowing that, yeah, our team's really good, but the Saints, holy crap, they are really good too. They've been stomping the NFC all season. But God, those no expectations turn into we are going to the Super Bowl. Judd, you've said it many times. Chip telling you in the press box.
Yes.
Hey man, we going to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
It
yes.
was that moment where you absolutely believed, which you never got this past Sunday. You're up 7-0, and then obviously everything went to hell. Versus in New Orleans, it was the moment that, yes, this is absolutely happening right now.
Here's why Sunday is so disappointing, though. You were built on something that you should be built on, and you have cultivated and developed and have a defensive coach, right? In 2009, it was a lot of fun, but that was Favre basically coming in and flipping off the Packers for 16 games. And that was, holy bleep, Brett Favre is playing for the Vikings, and that defense was not great. So that season was fun, and that was a good team, and Favre was the addition that gave that team certainly a chance to win a title, but nonetheless, I thought the stability of this team was greater, and that's why it surprises me.
You know, I've never thought about it this way, the 2009 season, but because the whole season, like you said, was a double middle finger tour, just yes. an anti-Green Bay tour for him.
Yes.
But Green Bay was his first and deepest love. Those Packer fans, Lambeau Field, it's almost like in the end, he couldn't bring himself to finish off the Packers. You know, it's like, it's almost like as he's rolling out to his right, he was thinking about those Packer fans and Lambeau Field and said, I thought this is what I wanted. I thought I wanted to ultimately stick it to them by winning a Super Bowl with the greatest rival of the team that I divorced.
He turned on himself?
And that he said, I can't. It's like when you're there's movies like this all the time where you're about, it's the kill shot's about to happen and then someone comes to their senses and thinks, I can't do this. I once loved this person, right? That's what it feels like when I think back on the 09 season.
It's Darth Vader killing the Emperor, but you guys don't understand Star Wars references.
Spoiler alert.
And which one? You just ruined it for me. I was going to watch all of them tonight when I got home.
I hear they're showing him at Ruby Tuesdays. 651-646-8255. Hey, George.
Yeah, a couple things. That 75 team that everyone talks about was yes. extremely overrated. They didn't beat a team with a 500 record all year. If you go back and look at their game log, they were everybody, you know, the Central Division was down that year, and all their opponents were all their wins were against sub 500 teams, and that Cowboy team was not very good. They were a wild card team that barely squeaked in. On the 0-9 team, I agree with what Dave just said. You spent the whole game waiting for the Saints to keep to kick the crap out of you. Then they finally get the ball back to the last drive, and you're thinking they're going to the Super Bowl, and then it gets yanked away. So that's why that's the most disappointing for me. And then a question for Judd. I wasn't able to make the hockey game last night. Obviously, you weren't either. Who replaced you in the suite?
Well,
I'll hang up.
We're talking to him right now, Mr. Hockey.
Listen,
Mr. Puck.
Listen, George. You think Judd's Mr. Hockey? This guy right here. This guy was the replacement.
I mean, you called him possessions before, but we cleaned that up to shifts, and once we did that, you were fine.
Exactly. Hey, here just some more Vikings heartbreak, just factoids. The only three times in the last 25 years that the Vikings have outscored their opponents by 100 points or more in the regular season, 1998, 2009, and 2017.
There you have it.
So it all comes together. And they did it a few times in the Bud Grant era, too. Super Bowl losses.
George is right. In 1975 Central Division, the Lions finished second at 7-7. The Bears were 4-10. The Packers, 4-10.
The Packers were a disaster for like 20 years.
Oh,
right?
The 1970s for the Packers were awful. They were a complete laughingstock. Basically, from the 70s through until Holmgren got there in 92,
They
were a joke.
We aren't going to unveil any of these because they're all kind of in pencil, but we're going to be in Radio Row all week next week. And we've already got two or three really fun guests that we're lining up in person, including someone who's going to hopefully teach Judd how to do a really cool touchdown celebration. So we'll just tease that for next week.
In mesh shorts?
Hopefully you don't wear mesh shorts to Radio Row.
Or do I have to wear real pants to this event?
Pants are not optional for Radio Row. Good luck getting out of Philly.
I hope we do.
Judd and Collar.
Ruby Tuesdays, here we come.
Philly for 4 days. And we'll be back tomorrow. Mackie and Judd. Find our on-demand stuff at the show page, 1590ESPN.com.